What's up, everyone? I'm Nick.
And I'm Em.
And welcome to part two in the Ominous Archives. Are you ready for part two, Em?
I'm on the edge of my seat. I am so excited.
So excited for this?
I'm thrilled. I've been waiting.
All the conspiracies.
Yeah, this is the fun part.
All right, so let's recap a little then.
Let us.
I'm going to move the mic so it's going to make noise. Got my glasses on so I can see stuff this time.
Woohoo, no contacts today.
I have my last pair of contacts, and we have playoff softball coming up.
Got it.
They have to stay intact.
I have to go pick up my glasses. They're finally done. I got new ones.
Oh, there you go. Anyway, so the last time, we set the stage at the edge of Long Island at a place called Camp Hero. On the surface, it was just another military base. Military base. It was commissioned in World War II to guard against German U-boats, and later it was adapted during the Cold War with a massive SAGE radar tower watching the skies for Soviet bombers. By 1981... Yeah, I had to make sure I read that right, because I looked away. By 1981, the government said the base was no longer needed, and it was officially shut down. In the 1990s, it was turned over to the New York State and rebranded as Park. But as we learned, that's the only official version of the story. Whispers have circulated behind those sealed bunkers and under the shadows of that rusting radar tower, rumors of secret experiments, missing children, and even attempts to bend time itself. Two names stood out in particular, Preston Nichols and Al Bielek. Preston was an engineer with a background in psychology and electronics, claimed he worked on the projects at Montauk involving mind control and something called the Montauk Chair. I feel like I just sounded like the dude from Gettysburg.
You did. You did. That was his exact, like, cadence of how he said it. Yeah. That's so funny.
Al Bielek went even further, connecting Montauk to the infamous Philadelphia experiment of 1943, and insisting he had personally traveled through time.
Hmm.
So whether you believe them or not, their testimonies transformed Camp Hero from just another abandoned base into an enduring legend in America. For this episode, we're stepping into the deeper tunnels, the experiments, and the stories of psychic children, time portals, and supposed creatures that should have never existed.
I'm excited.
So when people talk about the Montauk Project, the most unsettling claims almost always return to the children. Believers say that beneath the radar tower at Camp Hero was an entire hidden complex of tunnels and laboratories. It was in these underground spaces, cold, sterile, and sealed off from the outside world, that scientists allegedly carried out a program of human experimentation on kids. There's a Bluey episode where they have a whole court thing going on. And Bingo keeps going, allegedly. And anytime now I say allegedly, it's all I can think about.
Any excuse Nick has to bring up Bluey, he's going to do it.
We've only watched it like 100 times. The story goes like this. Runaways, orphans, and wards of the state as young as 4 were taken, sometimes kidnapped right off the streets of Long Island or New York City, and brought to Montauk. Once underground, they were kept out of sight. What happened to them was anything but humane. Researchers allegedly broke them down through trauma, stripping away identity, willpower, and the resistance until kids were pliable and programmable.
It's literally sick.
Yeah.
It's literally, like, so sick.
So sick. That's how they got 11.
Literally.
There's probably an 11 somewhere.
Which is insane. Like, mm-hmm. That is so crazy.
Anyway, back to the story. This is where the phrase Montauk Boys comes in. According to Preston Nichols and Al Bielek, these children were molded into what they called super soldiers, or psychic operatives. People who could be triggered, controlled, and deployed like human weapons. The conditioning methods described in these accounts are disturbing. Exposure to high-frequency transmissions, LSD, and other hallucinogenic drugs.
Like, mind you, these are children. Like,
as young as 4.
Right.
Electroshock, sensory deprivation, and repeated psychological torture. The children who didn't perform well were said to have suffered breakdowns or worse.
Yeah, like, no kidding. Obviously.
What? What do you think the worst could be?
No, I just mean, like, obviously they're going to suffer breakdowns. Like, that's going to be, like, that's horrible. It's, like, literally, like, psychological warfare. Mm-hmm. Like, that's and they're children. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you mean you're giving 4-year-olds LSD?
Yep.
Hello?
Well, one of the voices who later came forward was Stuart Sherdlow. He described memories from the early 1970s of finding himself strapped to a table in an underground chamber, unable to move or speak. He claims the room were damp and rough-walled, water pooling on the floor, and that he was forced through cycles of drugging and pain that left lasting scars. Sherdlow believed the goal was mind control on a global scale, an army of civilians who could be switched on or off at will.
It's literally sick.
Stuart wasn't alone, though. Another man, using an alias, James Bruce, would have been really cool if he went with Bond, recalled being forced to ingest LSD in what locals now call the Acid House at Montauk. Photographs from explorers show the small building's walls painted in precise, bright-colored psychedelic patterns, too neat to be graffiti. Believers argue that this matches the claims of LSD trials on children, designed to erode their defenses and make them easier to reprogram.
Well,
that picture's wild.
I was literally just going to say, I feel like if you put somebody who is on acid in that room, they're going to go crazy.
It's definitely, I mean, I think it's too random to be graffiti.
Yeah, absolutely not. It looks... That's not...
It's so weird, because it looks like graffiti, but...
What is graffiti? It's graffiti.
I don't know where graffiti came from. Maybe it's like a fish that's painted. I don't know.
Who is Garf?
I don't know. Garfield. It's weird because it looks like graffiti.
Yeah.
But you can see the way it's placed where you're like, it is too neat to be graffiti.
Right. Like, it's not.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that weird thing. You look at it and you're like, oh, that's just kids messing around. But then you look at it and you're like,
no, they didn't.
No,
like...
that's a really weird way to graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Some of the other details that have surfaced, while not proof, they only fuel the legend. Local teenager Brian Minnick and his friends explored the abandoned base in the 1990s and recorded their evidence of sealed doors, flooded tunnels, and unusual rooms with colorful wallpaper. They also uncovered receipts for food shipments, tens of thousands of dollars worth of goods delivered to the base in the late 1980s, years after it was its official closure in 1981.
That's wild.
To believers, right? To see late 80s having food delivered when it was all shut down,
mm-hmm.
makes you think. To believers, this suggests that something was still happening underground. even after the military supposedly pulled out. The accusations don't stop there. Some alleged survivors claim children were kept in chicken-wired cages. Others said they were shocked, submerged in buckets of water, or worked to exhaustion until their bodies gave out. The picture painted by these testimonies is bleak. Kids treated less like people and more like test subjects, or even fuel for what larger project was underway. Most of the accounts we've heard from Preston Nichols, Stuart Sherdlew, and others refer specifically to what they call the Montauk Boys. Those children were said to be programmed and conditioned underground at Camp Hero. But occasionally, the idea of Montauk girls surfaces. Al Bielek once claimed that girls were also involved, though in far smaller numbers. According to him, they were trained for different roles, sometimes as infiltrators, assassins, or even for disturbing purposes tied to sex programming. It's important to note, no credible first-hand reports of women have ever surfaced. No credible survivor accounts or documented testimonies. The only mentions come from Bielek himself, and his story has shifted. So while the legend of Montauk Girls lingers in the conspiracy, it remains speculation without independent evidence to back it up.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Because I did find it weird when I was listening to some podcasts about this and, like, reading, you know, doing some of my own reading on the topic, that they don't ever talk about girls.
Right.
It's kind of like, it's always the boys.
Yeah.
So, interesting to see that they may have been involved.
Right.
Many of the regressed memories surfaced years later, sometimes under hypnosis, and skeptics argue Nichols' own book may have influenced them. Still, the fact remains, after Nichols published The Montauk Project in 1991, others, especially ex-military personnel, have begun coming forward with their own disturbing stories. Whether or not they're true, they've become part of the Montauk legend, and keep the questions alive about what might going on beneath Camp Hero.
Yeah.
Allegedly, in the fall of 1943, the U.S. Navy conducted a radical test in Philadelphia. They wanted to make a warship invisible. But how do you make a ship invisible? The ship in question was the USS Eldridge. And the claim is that, for a brief moment, the vessel didn't only vanish from sight, but teleported from Philadelphia to Norfolk, Virginia.
Huh. What do you mean?
Some accounts even suggest the ship phased in and out of time itself. Now, official records tell a very different story. The Naval History and Heritage Command studied the Eldridge's deck logs and war diaries. They showed the ship wasn't even in Philadelphia during that window. Instead, it was doing training runs out of Bermuda, escorting convoys to North Africa, and then heading back to New York. The logs are meticulous, and on paper, nothing unusual happened. But why? My thing is, if they did something like that, and all that stuff happened, why would you have them document it? Like, you wouldn't want that out there.
Yeah.
So you would keep your deck logs and everything like that clean. You'd keep that, like, spot on.
Right.
So if somebody looked at it, it's like, oh, this thing was, no, this is all this did. But in reality, that this is what actually happened. Not trying to feed into the conspiracy, right. Not, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If I'm going to hide something, I'm not going to put it in my deck logs.
Right.
There's also the matter of witnesses. The story often involves a merchant ship, SS Andrew Frewshwith, whose crew supposedly saw the Eldridge suddenly appear in Norfolk, but the captain of the ship, William Dodge, went on record years later denying his or her crew had observed anything strange. In fact, the records show the two ships weren't even in Norfolk simultaneously. And yet, the legend persisted. But again, you're not... You're going to want somebody to go out there and say, this didn't happen. Right. Our ships weren't even close to each other. You'd want that.
Mm-hmm.
Not feeding in.
Yeah.
Just, well, feeding in, but not... You know what I mean? But some even called it Project Rainbow, tying it to unfiled field theory. A hypothetical framework that could have linked electromagnetism and gravity. The Navy said repeatedly that there's no evidence Einstein ever worked on invisibility or teleportation for them. But still, the idea that a wartime experiment slipped into something reality bending caught the imagination of conspiracy writers.
Well, yeah.
Why wouldn't it?
Right.
Right? This is where Al Bielek comes in. He claimed he wasn't just familiar with the Philadelphia experiment, he lived it. According to Bielek, he and his brother were crewmen aboard the Eldridge during the test. When the ship phased out, they jumped overboard to escape the chaos, only to fall, not into the sea, but into kind of a temporal rift. Here's the truly wild part. Bielek insisted he was later age regressed, his memory suppressed, and he lived for decades under a new identity.
No, that's wild. That's insane.
That's what I'm saying. And to, like, I don't know, to jump overboard, not land in water, and land in this rift.
What do you mean?
The other thing is, I feel at least with this one, and we might touch on it in a second, you could look up crew ship. Like, you could look up the members of the ship, probably.
Right, yeah.
And if he was on it or not. That's one where I'd be like, all right, the only way they would fake him not being on there is because all this happened. And they're like, just get him. If we just make it look like he's not on the ship, then we don't have to deal with this.
Right.
So only later in life, after hypnosis and triggering, did those memories come flooding back. And in his version of the events, the Philadelphia experiment didn't just end in 1943. The beginning of a larger research continuum. Research that matured decades later at Montauk. So, was Montauk a combination of a Navy experiment gone wrong? If you take Bielek at his word, yes.
Right.
What began as a desperate wartime attempt at radar invisibility involved into something far more ambitious, attempts to master time itself. But skeptics point out a crucial problem. There's never been a shred of physical evidence to support the Philadelphia experiment. No papers, no credible eyewitnesses, and no anomalies in the ship's official logs. From a historian's perspective, it simply didn't happen.
Which is wild. Like,
that's my thing. Again, though, if the military wanted something to disappear, they could make it disappear.
Right.
Like, they're not... You're not just going to see these things out there.
Mm-hmm.
Still, it's this very absence of proof that makes the Montauk story so compelling to some. If the Navy could pull off teleportation... Or even brushed against it. Wouldn't they bury it? I just said this.
Yeah.
Every scrap of evidence.
Right.
If that research continued, perhaps Camp Hero would be where the next chapter would play out.
Yeah.
Building on the story from Philadelphia, the Montauk Project believers claim that the experiments didn't just stop at thought projection. They escalated into manipulating time itself. One of the most notorious aspects was the so-called Montauk Chair, a device allegedly designed to amplify psychic abilities to unprecedented levels. Witnesses and supposed participants describe it as a complex piece of equipment capable of projecting consciousness and opening portals to other times and places. Duncan Cameron, a central figure in Bielik and Nichols' accounts, is said to have been the primary operator of these experiments. In the early trials, Duncan's psychic projections sometimes manifested hours before or after the intended moment, suggesting an ability to interact with the flow of time. Researchers quickly realized that controlling this energy required specialized infrastructure, which reportedly led to the construction of the Orin Delta T antenna, a massive underground device said to have been based on designs for extraterrestrial sources. This antenna allegedly stabilized temporal distortions and enabled more precise control over portals. According to accounts, the portals appeared as spirals or vortexes, sometimes forming circular tunnels with light at the far end. Observers could look through the portal and see another portal on the opposite side. Walking through it meant entering a different time, but the tunnels weren't always straightforward. They could curve unpredictably, and power failures occasionally stranded participants in the time stream with no clear way back.
No.
Let's just walk through a tunnel.
Right.
Walk through a tunnel and then possibly not come back.
Yeah. Sounds fun.
It sounds like a blast from the past. Or the future. Who knows? The scope of these temporal experiments was vast. Subjects, often children or vulnerable adults, were reportedly sent hundreds of years into the future or placed within historical events to observe outcomes. Some witnesses even claimed off-planet explorations with portals connecting Montauk to Martian structures, including pyramids and the so-called face on Mars. While the details are murky, these reports suggest the project attempted to combine time manipulation with spiral displacement, opening paths to different eras and entirely new worlds. Skeptics naturally questioned all of this. There is no physical evidence to confirm time portals, alien technology, or psychic amplification devices. Yet, the detailed first-hand accounts from Bielik, Cameron, and others give a consistent narrative thread, linking Montauk's psychic experiments to an ongoing pursuit of controlling consciousness and, perhaps, reality. So, we are in the Matrix.
To make a long story short.
It's red pill or blue pill. For believers, the Philadelphia experiment was only the beginning, the foundation upon which Montauk sought to expand the limits of the human potential and the very nature of time. The Montauk chair was the central device in the project, designed to amplify the psychic abilities of individuals like Duncan Cameron, using a combination of electric coils, Cray 1 and IBM 360 computers, and integration. Why can't I say that? Ready, M? You say it. And integration. That's what it is.
Integration? Is that right?
Yeah, integration.
I feel like it's missing a letter. It's weird.
Maybe. And integration with the SAGE radar system. The chair converted psychic energy into measurable and usable effects. The technology was reportedly based on information from extraterrestrial sources, specifically the Sirians. That's right, aliens. Initially, the chair allowed researchers to transmit thoughts remotely. Later, experiments expanded to creating physical manifestations from thought, manipulating electrical devices, and influencing human behavior. The first stage, the seeing eye, involved using personal objects, such as a lock of hair, to remotely observe a person's perceptions. Experiments followed this in direct mind influence, where a psychic in the chair could guide subjects' actions.
Like, this is freaky. Like, this is crazy.
Wild, right?
Like,
By 1979, the chair's capabilities included telekinetic effects. Duncan could move objects, manipulate electrical equipment, and interact with physical environments without direct contact. The experiment also revealed time-related anomalies, or objects or effects sometimes appeared earlier or later than expected, indicating a potential influence on temporal flow.
I don't know if I'm going to sound crazy or not, or if, like, people are going to be like, yeah, no, I fully agree with you. I, like, kind of find it harder to believe that, like, we couldn't if we do something like this. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I find it, like, harder to believe that. I'm like, us as humans have been around on the Earth for as long as we have been. You mean to tell me nobody's figured it out by now?
Yeah. It's almost kind of like that unlocking the rest of your brain.
Yeah, right.
You know, the whole we use 10% of it. Uh-huh. Well, let's unlock the 90%.
Right, where's the rest? Yeah. Like, what's the rest it was? Mm-hmm.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're crazy. I think it makes sense. So during one experiment in August of 1983, the chair was used in an attempt to create a fully materialized entity from concentrated psychic energy. The experiment reportedly resulted in the manifestation of a creature that attacked the equipment and personnel in the lab.
Huh.
According to the accounts, this incident specifically damaged the base's instruments. Following the event, the underground corridors were sealed, equipment was abandoned, and the Montauk project was abruptly ended.
No, because could you imagine that? Like, yeah. Yeah, just accidentally made an entity. Like, what?
They just let a demigorgon out.
What do you mean? Like, that's insane.
Right? This incident is often cited as the origin of the fictionalized representations, including the hit Netflix show Stranger Things.
No, really?
Yeah, really. According to Nichols, Cameron's use of the chair to manifest a creature was the final phase of the project, demonstrating both the chair's potential capabilities and the reason the program was terminated. In July of 2008, a strange carcass washed up on the beach in Montauk, Long Island, quickly grabbing the attention of the public. Photographs of the creature showing a hairless, bloated body, oddly shaped limbs, and what appeared to be a hooked beak spread across tabloids, blogs, and social media. Speculations ran wild. Some claimed it was an unknown animal, a cryptid, or even a remnant of the Montauk Project's secret experiments.
Mm.
For believers, this was a potential echo of Nichols' infamous beast from the ID, the creature allegedly unleashed in August of 1983. During one of the Montauk Chair's experiments, the timing and location of the discovery decades later seemed to confirm, at least in their minds, that something unnatural had once roamed the base. Scientists and wildlife experts, however, approached the carcass with a different perspective. A detailed analysis of its anatomy and decomposition patterns suggests that it was not a mysterious experiment, but a raccoon.
No shot.
The hairless appearance, unusual limb proportions, and beak-like snout were explained by typhonomic process. I don't even know if I said that right.
I don't even believe
it.
But
it sounds good. The natural changes that occur as a body decomposes in water.
Yeah, no, I get that, but, like, that much?
Wait till you see the pictures of it.
Oh, I don't want to.
Fur often slots off. Soft tissue breaks down, and skull structures become exposed, which can dramatically alter a creature's appearance. Closer examination of the Montauk monster's teeth and digits further supported the raccoon hypothesis. Its lower jaw remained sharply cusped post-canines, while the upper jaw had lost teeth, creating the illusion of a hooked beak. Its long, dexterous fingers were consistent with the North American raccoon, known for its surprisingly leggy proportions compared to typical assumptions. While the scientists dismissed the Montauk Monster as a misidentified raccoon, its story fueled public fascination, blogs, proof hunters, and conspiracy theorists connected it back to the alleged experiments at Camp Hero. Treating Nichols' Beast from the ID claimed as evidence that the Montauk's legacy might not be entirely confined to books and stories. The Montauk Project symbolizes the intersection between folklore and alleged government experiments and public imagination.
Let me just say something right now. I've seen a lot of raccoons in my life, and I so get what they're saying. Like, I so get it. Like, I know what you mean. Submerged in water, it's gonna be decomposed, that whole thing. Like, I know. That is not a fucking raccoon. Are you kidding me? That's look at its face.
Yeah.
Like, it looks more like a pig.
Yeah, I'd like
to... The first mm-hmm. picture, the ear is giving pig yeah. to me.
Yeah.
The teeth, like, are raccoons' teeth that sharp? Like...
Yeah, they got a little...
That sharp, though? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, the front definitely looks like a beak.
It's freaky. And, like,
to me, I guess, like, I'd like to see, like, a fully, I guess, decomposed raccoon skull.
Right, like, I don't really know
like, I want to see what a raccoon skull looks like to compare to this.
Yeah.
Just because, like, all right. You're saying the teeth fell out and this and that, but that looks awful beak-like.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, you're saying that thing hit a rock or something right. hit it where it knocked the teeth out and, like, the front...
Yeah.
The front...
Right, like, there's a lot of things that had to happen mm-hmm. here for it to look like that.
Yeah. Is what I think.
Yeah.
Occasionally, a conspiracy theorist or alternative history emerges from a single individual and captures public attention despite having no solid evidence or plausibility. The Montauk Project is one of the most notable examples. According to its story, the military ran a secret program for decades at a sprawling underground facility on Long Island. It involved time travel, interdimensional portals, enormous alien creatures, and other extraordinary claims. The narrative exists primarily because of Preston Nichols, who authored the original books detailing the project.
It is kind of crazy to me that, like, nobody before him
mm-hmm.
ever thought, like, oh, okay, I'm going to write about it yeah. now. I don't know.
It makes it interesting.
Yeah.
The Montauk Project spawned a wide range of derivative works and fan fiction. Nichols and his co-author released multiple sequels, further elaborating on the Montauk universe and material that it would have been that would have been expected in the first book if it had been factual. Much like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this collection of works can be considered a Montauk Project Universe, or MPU. Internet bloggers, writers, and independent filmmakers have continued to expand the narrative. Notably, Netflix's Stranger Things was originally titled Montauk and drew inspiration from the alleged Montauk Project. At the same time, the Travel Channel's Strange World featured Christopher Gaetano investigating conspiracy claims, including interviews with supposed participants. Despite its cultural footprint, the MPU exists entirely in pop culture rather than in verified history.
It's crazy to me that it was, like, that heavily based off mm-hmm. of Montauk that they literally almost called Stranger Things Montauk.
Now that you know.
Yeah.
And you think about it.
That is a little crazy.
Mm-hmm. Isn't Archie that wild? Agrees. Mm-hmm. Archie's just shaking all over the place with the greens. The alleged location of these events, Camp Hero, at the eastern tip of Long Island, has a documented military history. Camp Hero housed Army, Navy, and Coast Guard facilities during both World Wars, later becoming Montauk Air Force Station as a part of the Cold War's Air Defense Radar Network. By 1981, satellite reconnaissance had rendered the station obsolete, and it was decommissioned. Today, the area is Camp Hero State Park, open to the public with trails and buildings that can be freely explored, making it highly unlikely that the kinds of secret underground operations described by Nichols could have occurred unnoticed. The Montauk Project books are nonfiction, stating that their contents are accurate to the best knowledge of the author. Still, the text also allows for interpretation as science fiction. Many of the claims in the books, including the use of Project Rainbow technology, are partially based on real events but exaggerated. Project Rainbow, in reality, consisted of declassified attempts to reduce the radar signature of an aircraft like the U-2 using practical methods such as radar-absorbing coatings and beaded cable arrays, which skeptics say is nothing remotely resembling the removal from the space-time continuum.
I don't know if this has, like, literally any, what's the word I'm looking for? Correlation to each other. But, you know, in Stranger Things, they literally call it the Rainbow Room. Eleven, like, literally freaks out in the, I think it's the first season.
Oh, wow. I don't even think I realized that. You're right.
They literally call it the Rainbow, Rainbow Room.
Never put two and two together.
That's so crazy. Like, wow. I wonder if they were, that can't be a coincidence.
Mind-blowing. In Nichols' version, this technology allegedly enabled extensive use of time portals through which derelicts, homeless individuals, and young boys were sent to various times and locations, including a purported pyramid on Mars 125,000 years ago. That's insane.
What?
These events were said to occur in a 12-level deep underground facility beneath Montauk. In reality, such construction would be impossible due to Long Island's geography. The area consists primarily of glacial tilt, a loose, water-saturated gravel incapable of supporting extensive underground structures without catastrophic engineering, making such a base implausible. Moreover, Preston Nichols claimed to have participated in extreme experiments, including cutting power to the Montauk Chair's transmitters with an acetylene torch, allowing a massive psychic-generated creature to disappear. He also allegedly shared equipment with UFO researchers and revealed classified information openly. The idea that such activities could occur under government supervision without restriction is inconsistent with how classified programs are handled. Camp Hero remains fully accessible to the public, further undermining the likelihood of hidden interdimensional experiments. Or is all this logic irrelevant? After all, there is a precedent for the government to hide such secret experiments and projects as we've discussed. In fact, in May of 1997, then-President Bill Clinton apologized for some of the experiments, saying, "Thousands of government-sponsored experiments did take place at hospitals, universities, and military bases around our nation. These experiments were kept secret. The United States of America sincerely apologized to our citizens subjected to these experiments."
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's wild because they... What was it? There's one, and I don't want to misspeak, so I won't go, like, crazy into it, but it was almost like... miners were going into, like, mine shafts, but before they could get in there's, like, a room they went into, and they'd spray them with air or whatever, mm-hmm. but in the air was, like, ammonia or mm-hmm. aluminum or something like that, and it ended up giving them cancer and everything, and they were just like, oh, yeah, that was our fault. We were doing this because we wanted to see what it did to people. Like, and don't, that's, like, a brief thing of like what I remember happened.
Right.
Don't hold me to that on like what it was. And, but I do know that they did something like that. Right. It was like they were either going in or coming out, and they'd spray them with air or something, and it was insane. Also, hold on, we might get into it. Today, Camp Hero is a public state park offering hiking trails, picnic areas, and beach access along the eastern tip of Long Island. Yet, even in its current form, the remnants of the military past remains unmistakable. The most striking feature is a massive radar tower, once part of the Montauk Air Force Station's Cold War-era defense system. Standing tall against the skyline, it looms over the park like a silent sentinel, a concrete and steel monument to decades of secrecy and speculation. Visitors to Camp Hero often report an unusual sense of unease near the tower and surrounding areas. Some describe a sudden quiet as if the sound of nature itself is muted. Others note strange occurrences with electronic devices, cell phones losing signal, cameras malfunctioning, and compasses spinning unpredictably. Whether these phenomena are psychological, atmospheric, or purely coincidental, they feed into the lingering aura of mystery surrounding the site. The tower casts long shadows across the sandy trails and the coastal edge as the sun sets. For a fleeting moment, it is easy to imagine that the area conceals secrets far beyond research of the public eye. One cannot help but ask, was Montauk simply a military base? Or was it, in some sense, a place where reality was bent?
Yeah.
The other thing that's wild, too, about Montauk is apparently the Lyme disease tick population there is like through the roof. It's like the Lyme disease nation, like capital.
Interesting.
And some people say it's because of the Montauk Project.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wild.
This place is crazy.
Yeah.
And apparently too, depending upon where you go, there's still like armed guards will come out of nowhere and be like, you can't be here.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And you tell me nothing's going on in there.
I'm not saying that maybe, like, Nichols is,
Although, like, what do you mean he just, like, pulled that out of thin air?
I mean, maybe he didn't. So, like, here's my thing. Did all that stuff happen? I'm sure it did. Like, I'm sure they did experiments and stuff in there. And even though they say, like, the structure can't be built because the ground can't hold it or whatever.
Right.
They could do it.
Yeah,
it could be done. There's tunnels that are flooded. There's doors that are welded shut. There's something that went on there. Now, is everybody else continuing to stay quiet? And, you know, you have three people mainly who kind of have talked out about it. And some of their stuff just doesn't line up. Like, it doesn't make sense. But if you're the military and you wanted to keep this stuff under wraps, don't you think you would just let him go? And just let him do his thing and be like, yeah, it's true. Whatever, right. Whatever he says is true.
Yeah.
Because how many people are going to have a... You're going to have a hard time. These three people are saying it and nobody else is. You're going to have a hard time being like, no. Like, it's true. So, I fall somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Do I think these things were happening? I'm sure they were.
Yeah.
Do I think we opened up portals and all that other stuff? Maybe not. Do I think the Philadelphia experiment we'll cover later on because I think it's crazy and cool, especially what they say happened to some of the men on the ship? Yeah. Do I think it's possible that they did that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Because there's time slips all over the place. People go walking, and we'll cover this at some point too. People go walking in national parks, disappear for time on end, and then reappear 50 miles away, and they're like, what day is it?
Oh, yeah.
I was only going for like 3 hours. What? That was a really elegant arch. But anyway.
Yeah, no, that's insane.
That concludes the Montauk Project. So, I hope everybody liked it. It was definitely, I think, the new way we're going to do two-parters. We're definitely going to adjust it to for next season. As we have a two-parter come up, I think we're going to do like a Tuesday-Thursday release, or maybe like a Wednesday-Friday or something like that, just to make it a little easier so you don't have to wait a whole week.
Won't keep you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, we have some big things. This will be my last episode for season one.
Yes.
We got one more dialed up for you. Hopefully to help enjoy the holidays. Yeah, so we've got some big things in store. The last episode. Hopefully, you know, help you enjoy your holidays. Mm-hmm. And we hope you enjoy your holidays. Have some fun. We're going to take a much-needed siesta, obviously. and we will be back January 2? Yeah, January 2nd. And this episode, honestly, would not be possible if it wasn't for Sam. She is a ridiculously good writer. she definitely helped us. She did a ton, like, really great research with this. And did an amazing job breaking it into two parts for us, because when I first wrote this up, it was a mess.
It was a lot.
Yes. And she killed it as always. So go and check her blog out at Scare Me Sam. And also, if you're in the market for a new book, go check her reviews out at Scare Me Sam. I think she's on everything. Spotify, Apple, what's the other one? Amazon. Mm. All right, I'm running out of breath, and I am ready to call it a night. So, thanks for joining us for these two-part Montauk episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you rate, like, subscribe. Actually, we don't have anything to subscribe to, so just rate and,
just
like,
rate
us.
And like us.
We'll get the subscription later. So with that said, until next time, stay weird and stay haunted. See ya.